Hi everyone and welcome to Jerry Talks. This is the first episode or first podcast or first series. I'm so happy to be able to bring this podcast to life and I'm so happy to have Shem and Sammy with me as the first guest. What we wanted to do today is really set the scene for the kind of podcast that we want to have, what we want to impart, and really talk about a bit about the partnership. Me and Shem just having joined KAT Advocate and having a discussion with Sammy and Shem about the future of the legal profession, given the fact that we have undergone 9 months of COVID now, and we're going into 2021. So I just want to introduce Sammy and Shem. Sammy and Shem are both friends of mine, not only friends, but now partners. It's very exciting to be able to say that. Sammy is very well regarded and, you know, ranked in Legal 500 chambers as a corporate lawyer. One of the comments that I saw online is that he's said to be very calm, and that is very true. If you meet him in person, he wouldn't know the excitement that bubbles under. Shem is a friend of mine. We worked together as senior associates and now we're partners at KAT Advocate. Shem has a rapping as well as a legal background. I wanted to start with three quick fire questions for Sammy and Shem. So let's start with Sammy. Sammy, I mean, obviously you're very well regarded in the legal profession. How did you know that you wanted to be a lawyer?
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. That was very kind of you. I actually did not know that I wanted to be a lawyer. In fact, I thought I dreamt of being a doctor.
Really?
Yeah. So that was my initial intention. And then I actually did a year of pharmacy school.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, but after a year of pharmacy school, I realized that I did not like it at all. And maybe looking at cadavers was not really my thing.
Pharmacy is so different from law, even in the way the execution of the work. How did you transition then?
I think it was more of looking for the next best thing. And the people I looked up to suggested that people who were going to be somebody were either going to be doctors or lawyers. So,
and I guess that turned out to be correct for you.
Yes, it turned out to be correct. And also it ended up to be something that I really enjoy doing because I think I enjoy solving problems, listening to people and helping them find solutions for whatever it is that may be bothering them or challenging them. So I find that, you know, as a lawyer, those are important traits and that I've come out to be quite useful for me and that have made it more of a natural profession for me, in as much as I had no preconceived intention of getting into the legal profession.
I mean, I think that's very special, and it just shows that you don't have to choose one area and then, you know, stick to that. Sometimes it comes naturally to someone and you realize what you were good at and what where you can be of service. Shem, let's go to your quick fire question. You specialize in IP. Why IP law?
I started out my career at HHM. That's where I met Sammy. I was in the corporate and commercial team. I mean, there were opportunities that arose when certain lawyers left who had IP expertise. And it was really just as simple as that. I mean, they looked around and, you know, asked who had an interest, and I was happy to sort of step in. I had worked with some of the lawyers who had left, and when I sort of took it up, it was like a duck to water. So they were like, okay, fine, you seem to be getting the hang of this pretty quickly, why don't you run with it? And so the opportunity just arose, and I seized it, and I discovered that, you know, it was something I really enjoyed doing and I was really good at, or so I was told. You know, and I built confidence over the years, and really just that's how it happened.
Sometimes it's natural ability combined with just the opportunities that you're given, right?
Right. That was the case for me, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Sammy, what has been the most exciting moment in your career, knowing you and knowing that, you know, you don't really show a lot of emotion? I only spot it sometimes when your eyes flicker. Tell us what has been the most exciting moment.
Yeah. No, I would like to think I'm an open book, but I mean, I haven't thought of that question before because I think I just live day by day. And I do my best each moment of the day. But I think there have been pretty special things that have happened in the past throughout my career. It might be difficult to say which one in particular. Maybe the one that was the most risky was leaving the comfort of a good job as a partner in a good firm and starting out, you know, a new law firm in a period of a lot of uncertainty, because we started out during an election period and all indications were that it may not be the appropriate time to start. But I think there's no right time to start if you're looking to do something that you feel that you love to do. So I think maybe starting that out and seeing it grow to where we've reached now, I would say is maybe the most exciting thing, simply because it's the most challenging.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, even for me, having joined a month ago, getting your first client, especially in the COVID period, has been extremely exciting. And I know, Shani, you feel the same way.
True,
it has been excitement levels on an, you know, just to be able to secure a client and say that you're doing it on your own has been very exciting. So I can understand that feeling. Shem, let's go to you now. And your rapping, your prolific rapping skills. Are you going to rap for us on this podcast?
Unlikely. It's unlikely. I wouldn't say I'm prolific.
We could persuade you, but you're nominated for Best Hip Hop Rap Song at the Verse Awards. Why rap, and how did you get into it?
Well, my faith is a big part of my life, and just after high school, many years ago, being in church, and I came from a church that has a very heavy musical background. So there's lots of bands that were playing. There's lots of young people who were showing interest in music. There were studios that were being set up all over, small makeshift studios in people's homes for the most part. And you know, my circle of friends were interested in music, and that's how it began. So, I mean, I sang in choirs, then, you know, transitioned to more contemporary forms of music. And that was even before the law began, so before I joined university. So it sort of just lingered in the background as something that I enjoy to do. And it's sort of just been there. I haven't been so active the past few years. I mean, work has really become very, very busy. But, you know, every time I get the opportunity, do link up with a few people and work on a project or two. My hope, ultimately, is to set up, I was telling Clarice the other day,
Clarice is our other partner.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, set up a music label and deal with the business side of music and at the same time, you know, offer that legal advice that I would have the expertise in from an IP angle.
Okay, so just on the final quickfire question, Sammy, if you could give a young Sammy one piece of advice, what would you tell him?
A younger me.
A younger you, yeah.
I think I would say that maybe to not focus so much on, I think not to forget personal development. There's some things you need to do to make sure you develop as a person. Sometimes you find work can get ahead of you such that you forget what is important for yourself. So I think it's important to find that balance.
Yeah, I think it's something all of us are always struggling with, especially when you're going for something and you're focusing and you're trying to make sure that you reach a goal. It's very difficult to have that work personal balance, but I would agree with you on that.
I think that would be the main thing. Mm-hmm. And perhaps also ensuring that you work on relationships within the place, you know, where you're working, because I think those relationships are what provide you with a firm base upon which to grow in your career, in your profession. So I think that those would be the two main things I would say.
But I would think, Sammy, that, you know, from everything that I've heard and, you know, all of the well wishes that we've received since joining the partnership, I can honestly say everyone has had such nice things to say about you and about all of the other partners that we've joined, that I think you've succeeded in that regard. So I don't think you should be too worried. I don't think you should be too worried. Shem, you've been a partner for a month. We've both been partners for a month. I was going to say that you've made partner before the age of 40. What does that mean for you, and how do you feel? What are the emotions that come to you about your first month being a partner?
It's exciting. There's a challenge to it, of course. A whole lot more responsibility on my end. But what's life without a challenge, right? I believe we have what it takes to rise to the occasion, you know, to secure the work, to deliver quality.
We'll do it.
With excellence and, you know, to grow the brand. And there's no other way to go about it than that, in my view. So that's been good.
What's been the best part?
Well, the autonomy, I keep saying it for me. I like the fact that, you know, I can make my own decisions. I can consult, but ultimately the approach, you know, that I take towards what I do really rests with me, right? The decision on that rests with me. So I found that to be very liberating. I found that to be a very exciting part of this journey. I'm looking forward to the coming days.
Let's get into the meat of the podcast now. And we wanted to really set the scene about Kieti and, you know, what we're all about. So I think, Sammy, you're the best person to answer this for us. What is the Kieti's ethos, and how do we differentiate ourselves from other law firms in the market?
Yeah, so for Kieti, the ethos is we use an acronym. PIE, P-I-E, which simply means our ethos is based on personal service, excellence, and integrity. And I think on those three pillars anchors everything that we do. And I think if we're able to perform and provide our service based on those three pillars, straight away it differentiates us from the rest of the market. Because those are fundamental aspects of a good practice. And you find that many firms have one or two of them, but we are aiming to achieve all three.
All three, personal service, integrity, and excellence. Okay.
Correct, correct.
And on day one, when you started the practice, what did you expect to achieve? Was it all about that PIE, ethos? Or was it something different? Have things changed over time?
No, they haven't changed. I think when we set out, we set up the firm. I think the first intention was to have a place that is nice to work in. Not just nice looking, but pleasant, where you can enjoy spending your day working. And I think we've achieved that culture so that it's a friendly place to work, friendly, happy, but still very serious about what we do.
I think people would be surprised to find that we all sit together.
That's correct.
And we all talk together and we laugh together. A lot of laughter has happened in the last month, which is a far cry from having your own office in a very big building. And for me, that has been really enjoyable. What is the hardest part of running your own practice?
Yeah, I think setting up the infrastructure so that things run almost seamlessly, especially back office sort of systems. I think that would be the first. And maybe a close second is finding the right kind of support, recruiting the right kind of people, and ensuring that they understand and buy into your vision and into your, the firm's ethos.
Into the PIE.
Exactly. They need to eat. They need to eat pie.
They need to eat pie. Yeah. And I think that is difficult. And also, even coming into a partnership, me and Shem are coming into something that's already established. And I think the fact that we're already friends is steering us in good stead, because we already have that natural respect for each other. So I think that's been helpful. Shem, do you have anything to say on that?
No, I mean, I totally agree. I think the ethos is the foundation for any successful enterprise or venture. And if you get that right, half the work is done.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps build that collegiate atmosphere. It helps, gives you a true north, so to speak, your guiding light on the direction in which all your initiatives, all your ventures, should be heading towards.
Yeah.
So yeah. I did totally agree, and I think it's a very sound one.
Yeah. And for you, Sammy, I guess what has the ability to bring in new partners, me and Shem, meant for you in terms of what you expect for the firm and, the future of the firm?
I think many things, but perhaps I could say the main thing is it sort of demonstrates that we've moved beyond the founder phase of growth, and now we are, a solid, I dare say, well-established boutique law firm.
Yeah.
And in having you and Shem on board, I think just strengthens and gives us that depth of bench, and also sets us up to be able to attract more interesting and
varied work, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing about a young practice. Also, when we are all relatively young, we're all under 40, and therefore we are looking toward developing our futures. And I think that's something that is important for us. I wanted to ask a bit about being an entrepreneur, Sammy and Shem. I think, for you, Shem, one of the words I've heard you say the most, and you've already said it today, is autonomy and the ability to decide your own future. And being an entrepreneur is all about taking those risks. I am naturally a very, very risk-averse person. And in fact, this is probably the most risky venture I've ever undertaken. But under your wings, I'm to say that I'm flourishing. Did you expect that level of entrepreneurship, and are you prepared for what it entails, Shem?
I don't think anyone is ever 100% prepared for this sort of thing. But I think, once you've gotten to a certain level of preparedness in your own mind, that is sufficient for you to sort of venture out and begin. And you mentioned autonomy, and I think autonomy is a key part of that. It was part of the appeal for me, because my understanding of job satisfaction is that it entails three things. Autonomy is one of them. The correlation between your effort and your reward is another. And, you know, the third slips my mind. Yeah, the third slips my mind. But autonomy is a key part of job satisfaction for me. The complexity of the task is the third. I need to come back to me. So if you have those three elements in good balance, you tend to find job satisfaction. Of course, at different levels of employment or your career, you would have those three elements to varying degrees. For example, a first year associate might not necessarily have that much autonomy, but if they have a correlation between their effort and reward and they have a certain degree of complexity, they're likely to remain engaged.
Yeah.
Right. So for me, I've gone to the point in my career where I had enough complexity and there was some, you know, correlation, a reasonable degree of correlation between effort and reward, but the autonomy was just lacking. And for me, that drove me to the point of, you know, considering entrepreneurship. And it happened at the point where I decided to overcome fear. You know what I mean? Fear inhibits us. It keeps us from maximizing and tapping into our true potential. So I got into a phase of my life where I decided I would not make any decisions based on fear going forward. Like you, a very risk-averse person. I guess my desire for this new phase of my life.
And I think that's great. Talking about entrepreneurship, Sammy, did you expect that the level of entrepreneurship that setting up your own practice would require? And are we entrepreneurs in the same way as startups are? Do we operate the same way? Do we think the same way? What risks are there for us that there aren't for, you know, I guess PE or, you know, startup type companies?
I think for us it's different, simply because in the service industry where we operate as a law firm, it's very personal. So simply because the law firm has a new name does not mean that it's necessarily a startup. And I say this because we have more than 50 years combined experience as partners.
Oh, wow, I've never thought of that. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a new, you know, we've hung out the shingle. It's a new firm. But in reality, we've been working for more than a decade. And therefore, I would say it's quite different from just starting out something novel, as some startups want to do. And I think maybe that makes the difference. And that's why perhaps our trajectory has been quite different, because we've been working for a long time and we've just set it out in a new setup.
Yeah, so people hire people, not jobs, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
So the relationship that you have is the one that is key. And I think that has really stared us in good stead, even as we begin our careers and as partners. And I think Shem and I both will attest to that. So now that we've established our practice, we are here, we have personal relationships, we have pie, we've eaten pie, we are friends, we are friends, and we are now running a practice. COVID is the reality of where we are every day. Sammy, I want to understand from you, how has COVID changed things as a practice manager? And what are you anticipating for the future, given the fact that we're 9 months in?
Yeah, I think what COVID has done is it makes it harder. Because you see, harder for you to keep the entire office engaged, or at least to put your finger on the pulse, because you're not seeing everyone in one place. So presently we are remote working, and so you find that, you know, how do you make sure that everyone is involved and busy, and how are they really, you know? And sometimes it's very difficult to tell that over, you know, a call on Teams or Zoom. It's quite difficult, you know. So I think for me that has been the main challenge, because like I said, we're trying to build a culture where it's a friendly, happy, warm place to work. So how do you achieve that when you're speaking electronically?
And I think one of the difficult things I found is that, you know, when you have Zoom meetings or Teams meetings or whatever, your focus is more on the work product rather than the person themselves. How do you make sure that you're striking the right balance between ensuring that there is productivity in the office and also checking on your people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for us, because as a boutique firm, we have, you know, just the right number of people working for us. So the teams are just the right size. It's highly unlikely that anyone will fall through the cracks, as would maybe happen in a much larger organization. And so I think it's just making sure that everyone is aware that they could reach out if they have any difficulties, you know, and ensuring that you distribute the work in a way that considers the circumstances of the different fee earners you're working with. But I think for me, you know, given the size of our firm and the specialized nature of the work we do, it's very easy, you know, just to make sure that people are involved to the right degree and ensuring that they know they can reach out and it's an open it's open for them to communicate.
Well, we work in an open plan, so it's basically very open. So anyone who is in the office can come and talk to us at any time. Shem, I wanted to talk to you a bit about, you know, I think you've done a better job than I have of really getting to know the team, simply because of the kind of work that you do and I do. How do you make sure, you know, we're new to the firm, how do we make sure that we connect with the team members who are just getting accustomed to these new partners who've just come into the practice?
Right. I mean, I've been, you know, technology is a big deal now. I mean, it has to be embraced at this point in time. Even those of us who are the least, you know, tech savvy people, I would say, now have to sort of adapt. And I have calls, even individually with the team members. I'm reducing the number of emails unless, you know, they're absolutely necessary. You know, I just pick up the phone and, you know, get used.
I think they get up the phone is very important rather than sending emails.
Absolutely. If it's very necessary for me to send an email, I'll send one. But if I don't have to, or if an email could be a phone call, I just make the call. And people get used to my voice. They get used to, you know, speaking to me. And we become more familiar with each other. And, you know, we have to do that because we're not in the office all the time. So that for me has helped. And I mean, the team is fantastic. I've received excellent support so far.
Yeah, I have to say the team are fantastic. Yeah. From a client perspective, I think it's been evident, especially working in other jurisdictions, that Kenya's internet infrastructure and really the ability for us to be connected to international clients and to clients, you know, even locally, has really helped in this COVID pandemic. I think we are set apart or we can be matched only in, you know, Europe and in the United States in terms of our connectivity and ability to really communicate. How do we continue to demonstrate to international clients who may be afraid to come into the market that we are at par and we can provide services at a very high level and you won't be, you know, echoing down the phone or you know, having problems with connectivity and Wi-Fi, which really helps in this COVID pandemic time?
Yeah, my sense is that I think what causes perhaps international clients to maybe hesitate in some certain respects in providing instructions is the lack of maybe local knowledge. And I think it's for us to reach out and perhaps engage with them more so that we build better relationships and we can provide them an understanding of what the local landscape looks like. I think Kenya has a fairly solid reputation around tech and in terms of even our infrastructure. And therefore, like, I suppose that maybe what informs how those, you know, multinationals and other larger international law firms, I think it's just the relationships. You know, do they know you well enough? Are they aware of your capabilities? And so I think you just have to make sure that you've engaged them at a personal level such that they're able to trust that you can provide the service that you say you can.
I think from my experience, the clients have been very impressed with our ability to really respond, you know, really in time to their queries, whatever queries they've had, and been able to connect quite easily with them. So that's been very helpful. I didn't want to ask any legal questions for our first podcast, but I have to ask you, Shem, in terms of protections and, you know, data protection, what things should clients and, you know, what things should law firms also be thinking about to make sure that they're protecting themselves and adhering to new legislation that has come in, especially in the data protection space?
Yeah, I think it's a critical time for data protection. I mean, we've had the law in place from November last year. It's exactly, I think, a year now since it's coming. So it's been a year since the law came into place. The data commissioner has just been appointed. So we're now entering the implementation phase of the law. So essentially, the law has just been in place, but there's been no enforcing regulator. So now, all of a sudden, these concerns sort of have scaled up the priority list, I think, for lots of players in the field. All entities should be pretty switched on in relation to data protection, in my view. And a key starting point should be data mapping. Entities should just go all out to establish what personal data do they hold. Because every entity does hold personal data. You need to understand, what do you hold? What are the entry points for that data? Where do you store it? How do you store it? Who has access to that data? All those questions need to be answered by organizations that are in business, and they need to be at the forefront of their minds. I believe the need for a data protection officer will become more pronounced, especially in larger organizations, because you just need a central person
who will have oversight over that.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Because it may be too much for each person to handle in addition to their regular roles, if you assign it to everyone really in the organization. And that sort of decentralized approach might not assist the organization as a whole in understanding where it stands generally in relation to data protection. In the past, I've seen interest, more interest from, you know, abroad rather than, you know, local players. That's understandable. We usually adopt a wait and see approach here, but you know, entities abroad have found a more proactive in terms of risk management and attending to compliance. So that's to be expected, but I do see local entities picking up their pace in the coming days now that the data commissioner has been appointed. And in my view, I don't have a crystal ball, I keep saying, but I think the data commissioner will try to impose herself. A lot of people don't understand why data, personal data, should be protected, and why you need, you know, another state corporation and another regulator, you know. So she will definitely try to, you know, create awareness, but I think she'll also try to pass regulations quickly that will require compliance, perhaps registration. The registration regulations for data controllers and processors would be a starting point. It would enable her to get, you know, a sort of lay of the land and understand what the landscape is, and at the same time perhaps generate some operational revenue in terms of registration fees and all that.
Okay.
Don't want to go as far as saying that there will be some enforcement notices, but very well may be the case. And even if that doesn't happen, Kenya is becoming increasingly litigious. So perhaps civil, you know, individuals would want to enforce their own civil rights through a civil mechanism.
I was thinking specifically about, you know, things that people should be thinking about in terms, especially in the highlighted COVID pandemic situation. So, for example, you know, if someone has COVID in an office, revealing the name of that person, or, you know, keeping that information private or confidential. Those kind of considerations are immediate things that, you know, the data commissioner could try and seek enforcement on, because basically it's a breach of your privacy, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it does have ramifications even from an employment law perspective. Employment
exactly.
law practitioners such as yourself would know that, you know, it's been a key area of interest for employers. You know, how do we handle COVID cases within the office? How do we discharge our duty under the Occupational Safety and Health Act, you know, to provide a safe working environment for other employees without you know, sort of crossing over and infringing on the data privacy rights of employees who are affected by COVID directly. These are a delicate balance to be struck there. But, you know, familiarity and you know, grasping the concepts on both sides of this legislative divide will be critical. And advice definitely will need to be sought by employers. Lots of them are doing it already. Kudos to them. But it's something that needs to be done on a continual basis going forward. COVID is with us, I think. I'm not trying to be pessimistic here, but I think it's with us for quite some time to come.
And it will also be important, you know, for example, with the vaccine that's coming, or the choice to take the vaccine or not, you know, how people react and how people's information is treated will be crucial in 2021. I want us to now look at 2021 actually and think about what are the things that we can look forward to in terms of our own legal practice, and also in terms of, you know, social mobility in the COVID pandemic. So Sammy, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, 2021, I'm looking forward to continuing to be more adaptable in an increasingly unpredictable world. I think we just have to remain nimble and remain agile enough.
I like those words. So is nimble and agile your word for 2021?
I feel like we should all adopt those two words.
I like those words.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Because it's you don't know what tomorrow brings.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to be ready. And being ready in terms of just getting on with it.
Yeah. And I think we have gotten on with it. I think everyone has gotten on with it. And I think people are just looking forward to, you know, a brighter 2021. I think people are exhausted. They're COVID tired out. I don't know if there's a word for that. And people just want to get on with it. Shem, what are your words? What can you look forward to in 2021?
And this perhaps might seem a weird thing to say in light of the economic environment, but I do look forward to growth and expansion. I mean, there's been a bit of shrinkage, I guess, in the past couple of months. You know, people sort of were shying away from moving forward with their commercial transactions because of the uncertainty that was involved. And, you know, people put their pens down on a number of deals that were going on, and you know, people adopted a let's wait and see sort of approach. But, you know, I mean, at the point where we are right now, like I said before, it's becoming clear to everyone that COVID will be with us for a while, and that we need to find a way to work around COVID and still be productive. And so I think a lot of work and a lot of productive ventures that had. So I think that some of the work that had stopped and some of the people that are taking a wait and see approach will begin to engage once again, and there will be a rebound and hence the growth following this sort of slow period. And I'm looking forward to be part of that, that growth and expansion in 2021.
So I think growth, nimbleness, and agility are the words for 2021. I want to thank you, Shem and Sammy, for being on this podcast on the first episode. It'll go down in history. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next time.